are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Welcome to the Serious Growth Podcast, where the truth is known and told every single time we try. On today's show, we have Mikey P. What's going on, Mikey?
What's going on? How are you? How are things over there?
Hey, I'm in good old California, where all the taxes are high and all. There's all kinds of weird shit going on over here, and let me tell you.
Well, I'm in Las Vegas, where there's a lot of fun and a lot of sin and a lot of things happening out here, you know. It's good old Las Vegas.
There you go. Hey, listen, I just want to get right into your bio here. You're living in Vegas now, and I met you at the IMBA. You were at a booth next to me. But it says here, what I didn't know is that you're a transplanted rapper and pop singer. And again, you, so when you were in Philadelphia, did you already start, like you're in this group now for a while and you're making music. But when you were in Philly, did you get into music there? Or how did you get into all this?
Yeah, I was actually, when I was living in Philly, I was working at a radio station called Q102 out there in Philly. I was doing the night show. So I had my own radio show. I was working with the station, and then started doing music around that time. It was like 2003, 2004. I had resources at the radio station, so I was being able to be put on the station, doing remixes for them, and then getting on like radio shows. And then I had a single go viral back in like 2004 with millions and millions of views. It's called Tetris. And that was with my music group, The Cav. And yeah, ever since then, we've just been doing music, been doing tours. I won a VMA back in 2009. And I still work with them today. And then I also do solo music, where I just released a single on Friday and it's doing well. I'm just grinding, you know, just keeping the dream alive.
It sounds like to me that you learned the industry from the ground up. I mean, I would think that working at like you said, you worked at a radio station, but that seems to me like that gave you already like a place where you could leverage other people, you know.
Yeah, I really was. I mean, it was from the ground up. I was actually skipping high school when I was a senior to go be an intern for the morning show at the radio station, and they didn't even know I was in college. So then they found out I wasn't in college, so they had to either get rid of me or give me a job. So they gave me a job.
Okay. Cool. so that's basically how you broke in.
I feel like I actually broke in. I broke it.
Yeah, no kidding. That's really interesting. So the group that you, what's the name of your group again? Cav?
The Cav, DACAB. It's short for the Cavalry. It's kind of like, you know,
soldiers
in the music industry.
Okay. Now, are you guys still together?
We're still together. We actually have a show next week in Wilmington, Delaware that I'm performing a couple songs. We have a new album coming out that we're working on. Keeping it going. We had a single last year called Let's Take a Walk. It was an anti-bullying song, and we I did a thing on Fox 5 News. I was on a couple, I ended up getting a bunch of radio spins. I think we crossed like 100K on the music video. Yeah. So we're still alive and still kicking. We're doing a lot of good things.
So why don't you walk me through this? By the way, Wilmington, Delaware is at the top of the show. I told you that I was in when I came to Philly. There was Wilmington that I went to. They had a single A baseball team.
And oh, okay.
That's where I was. Is that
Wilmington? Wilmington is very, Delaware is very small. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure I'll be able to find it somewhere.
Okay. Anyway, so like when you started now, I mean, how don't you have to have like a bunch of money that's producing you to get yourself out there? I mean, how do you do this from the ground up?
Not necessarily. I mean, you just have to have a bunch of people that believe in what you're doing and a bunch of people that are on the same page and you're all cohesive and you know what the end goal is. So I found a group of people where one person produces, we all write music, one person does video work, and you kind of do it yourself mentality. And then once you have all the material and all the things together, you put it out and you start promoting and hopefully it sticks. And for us, we were fortunate enough that it did stick and people bought into it. And yeah, we have a bunch of fans now.
Because it seems like to me, there'd be a lot of competition out there. A lot of people wanting to do what you're doing.
There definitely is.
So to be able to break in, how many years were you in Philly and what was the pace of all that? In other words, I'm assuming that you didn't go from zero to 100 miles an hour. Was there a process along the way?
Yeah, I mean, I've been in Philly my whole life up until about 6 years ago when I moved to Las Vegas. So I'm born and raised out there. So these are like friends I grew up with who I just, you know, I had very good chemistry with, and we meshed really well. And then we kind of knew what lane we wanted to go in. Our music, like, we rap, but we also make, it's like rap pop music. So it's almost like LMFAO meets the Black Eyed Peas meets like G-Eazy. We kind of take a mixture of everything. And, you know, we found our own lane. We did something that I feel like nobody was really doing. We were like making music over more housey, techno, EDM style beats. And I don't think a lot of rappers were doing it at the time. So this was kind of new to a lot of people. And then all of a sudden, it caught on, and now everybody's doing it. But yeah, I felt like we were almost like the pioneers with our
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. So then you convinced the rest. I'm assuming you're the leader of the band, leader of the group.
Yeah, me and my boy Brian. We're like two equal leaders, but I feel like I'm more of the face of it, and then he's more of like the
behind the scenes.
He was the face ish in the beginning, and then kind of shifted to me. But we're still equal leaders in my eyes.
Okay, so then you you convinced the rest of the group and to all move to Las Vegas.
No, they actually don't. I'm the only one that lives in Las Vegas. That's why I always fly back and forth. But I felt like one of us had to be on the other side of the country because everything is not on the East Coast. I feel like there's things everywhere. So I felt like there was more opportunity or other opportunities out here. So I wanted to capitalize. And I feel like I have. I've been able to bring them out here to do shows, and we go back and forth. And I just feel like having Vegas in your back pocket or as you're on your resume, looks really good.
Yeah, I don't think that could hurt. You know, just from somebody who's a layman, I don't know much about the music industry. You know, I watch these on Netflix. I watch these documentaries like of old rock bands or whatever, and it's really different now compared to because of the technology. It's really different now, where the bands don't necessarily have to all be together. They just they do their thing separately, and then they bring it together and make music, right?
Yeah, we're writing our new album right now, and what happens is he'll do like a rough draft in his studio setup in his house. I'll do a rough draft of mine. We'll just like edit it together so we know what it might sound like, and then when we come together, like next week, we're all getting together on Tuesday, and we have an 8-hour studio session. We're gonna record all of those roughs. Yeah. So we already have it pretty much done. It's just a matter of, you know, it's piecing it together, and then finally, once you get together, it becomes like unified, and we just make it all work.
So my question then is, how do you come up with you're collectively in a band like that, does everybody have input, or is it like, because how do you come up with the inspiration? Like, is it a stated goal? Like somebody say, hey, I want to write, you know, for this album, or at least one song, this is the theme. How does that all work out when you got six people that are involved?
Well, I feel like we all come up with our own concepts, or we all have song ideas, and then we pitch them, or we start working on ourselves, and then kind of pass it around and see what people like. But yeah, I mean, we all pretty much have something that we bring to the table, and because we all have life experiences, whether it's a breakup, whether it's a cool experience to happen, or whether it's a thing with a girl you hooked up or anything, we all have these experiences. So we just find things that are relatable and then, you know, make it happen.
Okay.
I constantly have song ideas in my head. I live in Las Vegas. I see everything.
Yeah, right. I'm sure. Okay. So you come up with an idea, and I just want to break this thing down for the person that doesn't know. I mean, I don't know this, and I'm really curious about this, you know?
Yeah.
And I know just a little bit enough from these documentaries. So you each come up with your ideas about a song. And that's kind of like your rough draft.
And yeah, then for instance, on our song "Let's Take a Walk," I had this anti-bullying idea because I wasn't necessarily bullied when I grew up, but I wrestled for like 17 years, so I saw a lot of things, and I would always defend kids that I felt like were being bullied. So I wanted to make something to like kind of highlight what was happening in schools from parents. Maybe parents don't actually hear or see from a kid's perspective who wasn't bullied and you know, protected them. So I wanted to make a song about that. And then my other group member, you know, he witnessed the same type of thing. And then we have a female that works with our group. She was bullied. So we all were like, oh my God, this is all relatable to us. So I wrote my verse idea and then passed it along. And then the girl thought of a hook. And then my other boy thought of his verse. And we already had this beat from this one. Like, it was just like all these pieces came together, and it just stuck like glue. And that's how we know it's going to be a good song. It's just real life experiences.
Okay, so when you just mentioned something about when the girl got it, then she developed the hook. What does that mean?
I developed the hook, like the chorus of the song, the repeated catchy thing in the middle. She just, you know, she's a singer, so she wanted to get something catchy with a melody, something that, you know, she feel like they can relate. And then that's where the title, Let's Take a Walk, you know, she wanted to, her idea was, you know what, if you're getting bullied and you feel like you are getting this type of treatment, you know, you can talk to me, we can take a walk, we can get away from this situation.
Okay, that's interesting how that comes to be like that. Okay, so yeah. What was the with your group, what was the first song that you guys ever did that got pretty good play?
First song, it was a song called Tetris, like the video game. We took a remix of that with a DJ, and it's insane. If you type in DeKalb Tetris, there's millions and millions of YouTube views and streams. We're almost about to cross 8 million on Spotify. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like one of the top songs in Germany, because I guess it's a German beat. I don't know, but it's insane. Like,
I've never heard of it. Is it like a techno?
You've heard of the game Tetris, where the blocks fall down and you have to like mix it. It's a Game Boy game. I don't know. It's been around for like 80 years.
Mikey, I'm 65 years old. I may not know that shit. Just trust me.
You might. Honestly, I think it came out when Atari was out. Have you heard of Atari?
All right. Okay. But the beat, like if it's really popular in Germany, because I've been in Europe quite a bit with my sport, and they have that trance and that techno.
Exactly.
Is that what you're talking about a little bit?
That's what it is. It's that style of beat, and then we rapped over it. And yeah, Germany, it's insane. I look at my numbers, and every month we're getting like over 150,000 streams on Spotify, something crazy like that.
Really? And when was that produced?
We released that literally in 2004.
And it's still doing that. It's still those kinds of numbers.
This was our first song. I didn't even know it was going to be a thing yet. I was a bank teller. And I was on lunch break, and my friend called me. He's like, "Hey, come record this verse." I said, "Okay, I don't even know what the hell's gonna happen, but cool, I'll come do it." Did it, and then we released it, and then all of a sudden, people were just like, "This is the greatest thing ever!" I'm like, "How?"
Yeah, how? No kidding. I mean, is there like in my industry? Okay, training, bodybuilding. One of the places that we get to in our sport, and this is when you know that somebody's starting to become like they're mastering their sport, is when you can actually come up with a formula that produces and reproduces results. Now, is that the same thing in the music industry? Because you just said something like, I mean, we all start where you're talking. It's like, I don't even know how in the hell I got some of my results early on.
Yep.
You know, that became part of the process, because it's like, okay, we did this now. You guys have this great hit, but how do we do this again and again and again, right?
So you got to catch lightning in a bottle twice.
Yeah. So is there like a formula or a strategy that you guys use to build another hit?
I would say, yeah, we have a formula. It's kind of like I said, what we're doing. It's like the way it's been working, you know, sending one verse over, sending this over, it's this idea. It's been the process, and it seems to work. So we actually have a saying. We always say, trust the process. Mm-hmm. And we don't really know what the process is, but whatever it is, whatever we've been doing, I guess, is the process, because it keeps seeming to work. So I just, hey, trust the process. Whatever the process is, that just trust it.
And I can relate.
That's what's important.
I can relate that to. I learned this from a professional bodybuilder, and he was big into instinctive training. You know, instinctively, he trusted that. I think that's kind of what you're saying. It's just trust that process. And sometimes it's hard to do that. You really have to trust that, because what else do you have to draw off of? It sounds like, you know.
You got
to
trust your gut, man.
Trust your gut.
Your process.
That's for sure. So along the way, have you gone through phases where, you know, there's some bands that are out there that it takes a while for them to have another hit again and to be on that roll again. So have you guys, what's your sort of your roller coaster been, if you've had one?
Oh, I mean, yeah, we've had lulls where we haven't had anything pop off for a long time. I mean, that was 2004 with Tetris, but then we did sign a deal with this record label out of New York, and we had a song called Dirty Style that got a lot of radio plays. It was all over Sirius XM. We ended up doing, we were featured in a movie. We wrote like 5 songs for this movie soundtrack. So, I mean, there was times, like, there was low points, but then we hit super high points.
Yeah.
It's a roller coaster ride with music, because you never know what's going to work. You never know what somebody else is going to like, because you're making music for yourself, but you're also making it for somebody else. They're like, right. guessing what somebody else likes.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting older now. I hate the music I hear now. These new songs that I hear, it's like I call it the mumble rap. I don't even understand what the hell is going on. But you know what? I keep doing what I like to do and what I know I'm good at. And if it sticks, it sticks. I just dropped a new song on Friday, and we're almost about to cross 2,000 streams on Spotify almost immediately. So that's pretty good to me. So you just never know what's going to work.
Okay. So then how do you, for the guys that are breaking into the market now, how do you tolerate and withstand the lulls? I mean, are you still making you're lucky that you guys had a pretty good hit right off the bat.
Yeah. But
now when you go through that little lull and sounds like it could be, you know, a couple of years or maybe even more before you hit it again, what the hell do you do in the meantime to stay in the ballgame?
For me, in today's world, the ballgame and like the music industry, it's everything. You have to do everything. That's why, I don't know if you follow, but I do train a lot. I do American Ninja Warrior. I do TV shows. I've been on 8 reality shows. I keep my social media, my network huge. I'm constantly networking with people. I train with Jay Cutler. He's my training partner in Las Vegas. So, I'm constantly working with people and keeping my name relevant any way I possibly can, because I think that's the game. Everybody's trying to fight to stay relevant. And whether you're doing music, okay, yeah, I rap and I do my music, but it doesn't matter. It all translates. As long as people are looking at you, the next thing you drop, now they're looking at that. So as long as you're relevant, it's not the old days where you have to be on the record label. You have to get this. You have to get that. No, nobody knows what you have to do. The record labels don't even know what to do anymore. That's why I'm independent. I have a couple of solo deals with singles with record labels, because I knew that it could benefit me working with them and having their budget. But majority of the music I drop is independent, because I want to make 100% of the money. I don't want to make a fraction of.
Right. Because it sounds like in the industry, this is just me watching some of these documentaries where these big groups, they get screwed in the end. This is back then, you know, they never get their commissions and all that kind of stuff. And it was like, oh my God. I mean, they were pretty, some of these record labels are pretty vicious from what I saw, you know.
Have you watched the documentary on Lou Pearlman? Pearlman, he created NSYNC. He created the Backstreet Boys. He was paying these kids like $200 a week when they came out.
No,
that was
kidding.
It.
And he was just regular. Popping. Wow.
And NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, two of the biggest boy bands ever in the world, ever. Like, they were making nothing when they came out. It was insane. And they were all over the world. They were like wondering, hey, why do I have a hit single? Why am I on every TV show? But why can't I pay my car payment?
That talk about exploitation, right? I mean, that's vicious. That's brutal. But I guess in the industry, you know, the industry, there's a lot of cutthroat in every industry, and you got to be, hopefully you have to be able to, you know, come on out of on the other side of that. And I would imagine a lot of them don't, you know, they just get screwed like that.
A lot of them just give up. It's just, you have to have a different mentality. I feel like you have to have a hustler mentality, but you also have to have a strong, strong mental, like tough skin, because you're going to get everything thrown at you. Everybody's going to tell you, you suck. Everybody's going to tell you you're the worst. Everybody's going to tell you to quit, but the people that say, I don't care what they say, or just stick through it, they're the ones that win.
And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I want to give, you know, our viewers a sense of what it really takes, because the thing that you're talking about transcends into, as you know, into other areas of life and other arenas, you know, because you're constantly fighting that rejection, especially when you're in a creative type market. I mean, you know, bodybuilding is actually a creative sport. I didn't realize how much it was until I got into it. But, you know, you start, it's like everybody has their own damn opinion. You know, you're too skinny, you're too big, you're too this, your voice is this, and blah, blah, blah. You know, so I think it's important for, you know, what you're bringing out is really kind of the reality of, look, you know, it's not just a pretty face and a good voice. There's a hell of a lot more to that. You know, and again, I think one of the things that you're saying is the stick-to-itiveness to stay in it. And, you know, you're following your gut and you're following stuff that you like. And I think that's really important, that because you can't really necessarily, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but you can't really control how other people are going to respond to your music. All you can do is say, look, I did this because I had passion for it. I loved it. And let the cards fall as they may. Do I get this right?
100%. That's 100%. Whatever happens, happens. I mean, the same. It's like with bodybuilding. You said I'm gonna bring my best figure, my best form to stage.
Yeah.
And if you love it, or if I did everything I need to do and I win, great. If you don't, I mean, I can't change everybody's mind. I mean, like there's been a million people I'm sure that have been snubbed here and there. Like it's just, I see it all the time. I mean, like I said, I train with Jay. Jay's one of my best friends. And I've seen him go through everything. I've seen all the process. I've seen where I thought he should have won another one. I don't think he should be four. I think he should be five time, Mr. Olympia. That's my opinion. And I feel like that's the majority of the world's opinion, but I've seen that happen multiple times. I mean, I feel like people are getting snubbed all the time. It's just
constantly.
Keep smiling and know that you got it.
Constantly. You know, Schwarzenegger once said something. He said, you know, you got to learn how to play the game. And what he meant by that is that there's just politics in every game that's out there. And it doesn't get easier when you start climbing towards the top. It gets worse in a lot of cases. And you can either walk away saying, hey, I got screwed, I'm never going to do it again, or you figure out how to play the game. And again, we're going back to what you said, learn how to stay relative. And at some point, I think just based on the law of averages, you know, you keep hanging in there and just keep being willing to open up that next door. You never know.
Yeah. What's that saying? If you throw enough shit on the wall, something's going to stick.
That's a true damn statement. Okay. You give me some pretty good background on your music. You mentioned Jay Cutler. I have a little story with him. Not a big story, but a little story. When I came back after a 13-year layoff, I decided at the age of 53, I wanted to see, I get wild hairs up my ass sometimes about, you know, wondering if in this case, does muscle really have memory? Because that's something in the industry that's been talked about forever. Well, I learned that it actually did after a 13-year layoff. But one of the shows, my first show that I came back on, Cutler was the guest poser. And so I didn't really meet him there, but he was a guest poser. My wife met him. She took a photo with him. But I've never gotten to know Jay. From what I see, he seems like to be a legit guy, a nice guy.
Yeah, he's great.
So how did you end up in Vegas to train, of all people? How did you get into training, and what made you end up, how did you end up with Jay Cutler?
So I've been training my whole life. I started training when I was 11 because, like I said before, I mentioned I wrestled for 17 years. Wrestling, obviously, it's a very demanding sport. And then once I got finished wrestling and I didn't want to do it anymore, I still wanted to compete and still not compete, but I still wanted to have something to look forward to. So I got into like weight training. My dad was a power lifter when he was younger. So he got me a weight set and I fell in love with it. I'm almost insane. I'm mental with it. I've trained 2-3 times a day, whether it's fasted cardio, whether it's obstacle training, whether it's bodybuilding or all three. I have to do it. It keeps me sane.
Yeah.
And then, so I just kept training, you know, and then I realized I'm pretty damn strong. At 160 pounds, I bench pressed 415.
Yeah, that's pretty damn strong.
I think that's pretty good. and then I just kept going at it. And then obviously when I moved to Vegas, I still continued the training, but then I was, you know, I'm an MC out here. I was hosting an event about 6 years ago at the Palms, and Jay Cutler, it was Jay Cutler's after party for his Cutler Classic. And I was emceeing. I was actually messing with him on the mic, you know, like I was like, oh shit, Jay Cutler in the building, watch out. Like, keep your girls away from him.
Yeah.
You know, just like screwing around. And they thought it was hilarious. And then we exchanged the information. And ever since then, we just became really good friends. And we started training together because I have a very open schedule out here. As an MC, I work nights or music. I make my money in royalties. So like, I don't have a 9-to-5 job. And He doesn't really have a schedule with training. It's kind of just like whenever he can get it in because he has his office work. He has this, he has that. So he'll just text me and be like, want to train? And then, and then became a thing. Now we're training like 2-3 days a week or whenever we can. And he's a good guy and he gives me a lot of good pointers and it's cool. You know, like I kind of like keep him relevant with these MTV reality show people who see me. And then like, he's given me like a bodybuilding fan base that I never really had. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it is very cool. And the thing about that is, as you maybe have found out, when you're dealing with a professional world level bodybuilder, when it comes to anything that has to do with training, cardio, nutrition, you're at the right spot. I mean, there's no one better. I mean, assuming that he's a student of the game, I don't know Jay, but I mean, it's, you know, to be at that level, you got to kind of know, again, how to reproduce. And because when you come in year after year, and you're in front of different judges, sometimes you got to change the, they call it, come in with a new package.
Yeah.
You know, to see.
He's still got it. I think we stepped on the scale 2 days ago. He's 246. He's still ripped up. He's 5 feet. He's 5 foot tall, 5 feet wide. That's what I was going to say to him.
Yeah. So
I don't think he's had a piece of bread ever. So he's still eating healthy. I don't know if he's partnering in it, but he works with this company called Teriyaki Boy out here. So he's constantly eating these healthy meals. Yeah. He has this trifecta system. I mean, he's eating healthy. So he's a student of the game for sure.
Is he, I asked one more question about Jay. Is he competing at like the old timers level or in these different groups now?
He's retired. He's 100% retired. And he's just likes hosting a show. He has the Cutler Classic in April in Vegas, and then he has the Cutler Classic in April in Boston. So he still has his shows, and he still shows up and does the events. He's booked for the Fit Expo. I know he's going to Arnold. He's still very involved. And I think that's what separates him from a lot of these Ronnie Coleman's and Dexter Jackson, all these people that don't know how to cross over and keep their brand alive. I mean, he relaunched Cutler Nutrition, and he's doing huge numbers because he's keeping these influencers involved. These girls that are posing with their butts online have Cutler Nutrition next to them, because I think that's the mentality now. If a kid sees their favorite person doing something, now all of a sudden that's what they're going to do.
Yeah. And you're right about that. In the sport of bodybuilding, a lot of these guys they just want to get up on stage and compete. And then when it's all over, it's fucking over for a lot of them because they don't know. You know, they don't know. I see this in my background as not only was I trained in bodybuilding, but my background is in sports specific training. I train, NFL and Major League Baseball, these guys that make a living at this stuff, you know, and so many of them that when they get out of the sport, because they for so long have had guys like me in their corner telling them what to do, and they prefer that way. They don't want to learn. They just said, just put me through the paces. Because I just want to be a better ball player in this case. But it's hard to realize that your career at some point is going to be over. You know, when you're 20, 30 years of age, you don't think about stuff like that. And then comes that day or a freaking injury. It's like, now what? You know, and so many of them, I mean, in bodybuilding, it's pretty sad, actually. A lot of guys can't even get guys to come to a damn seminar.
I know.
They just don't know how to do that. Tell me about the I know you're a ninja warrior as well. So tell me how in the hell that you became a ninja warrior.
So Ninja Warrior, obviously it's a huge TV show on NBC. Like I said, when I wrestled my whole life, and I still wanted to have some type of competition aspect to my life, and because I love competing. Living in New Jersey, I started searching up gyms that have obstacles. And it just so happened that there was one pretty much two towns over from where my parents lived at the time. And I went and tried it out, and I was already really strong. I just needed to learn techniques. I found the owner of the gym was actually a fan of one of my songs, song Tetris that I told you about.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know what? You can come here for free. Let's just work out. Let's train together. And I became really good at all the obstacles, because I kind of had a gymnastic flipping background where I'm always – very agile. So it just worked. Once I got the techniques down, and my friend Chris Wilczewski started showing me these techniques, and Chris has been on, he was already on like four seasons before me, and I think he's been on every season after. He's one of like the OG Ninja Warriors. I took on to it very well, and then tried out for it. I sent in a video for season four. I got accepted, went, I made it the finals my first year. Then, the Ninja Warrior community is very, very cool. We have our own events. That whole year after, I started going to all these Ninja Warrior events, going trying out other gyms in other cities. Sent in for season five, got picked for season five again, made it to finals again. And then season six, same thing. So it was just, I became very involved. And now today I still involved. I'm not doing the show right now, because it's really hard for me to step away and go do the show when it's kind of like in the middle of like busy season here in Vegas. Like they film in May, and I'm just like, oh, I can't leave in May. It's money. But I'm still involved. I teach at a gymnastics gym out here in Vegas, Flip For Me Gymnastics. I teach all the young ninjas from 4-year-old to 12-year-olds. I teach every Wednesday and Thursday. I have like 60 ninjas that I'm just training them. So yeah, I'm very involved in the ninja community. I hosted an event yesterday with my friend Keith out here in downtown Summerlin for Ninja Nation. So yeah, I mean, Ninja Warrior, it's a lifestyle. It's almost, it's like bodybuilding. It's like, it's a community of very dedicated, very strong people, strong minded, strong physically. And we love our sport. We love what we're able to do, because we're able to do things that nobody else can do. And it's fucking cool.
So let me ask you this then. I'm going to assume that, and again, I think maybe I've watched one or two Ninja Warriors. I mean, it's just not my deal, but I've watched a couple of them.
Yeah.
So what's the lifespan in that thing? I don't mean like when you die, but I mean, like, I would imagine it's kind of a young person's sport, right?
Hey, I don't know. We have Grandpa Ninja. He's still competing.
Get out of here.
55 years old. He made it up that warp wall.
Hey, if he's Grandpa, what am I at 65? Am I like a lost cause? No, seriously. Now, do they have like age categories or something like that?
No, it's honestly 19 and up, 19 to 100. Whoever wants to compete. I mean, if you got it, you got it. Like, a lot of these people train. Like, we train almost every single day doing this. As long as you're not injured and you feel like you're physically capable of doing it, I know a 50-year-old that can do a backflip still. Sure. It's just a matter of how you condition, how you train your body,
and yeah,
how health is your wealth. So I mean, I feel like as long as you're keeping up with that, you should be able to do it.
Actually, I'm kind of playing with you. I mean, I've been training for 38 years, and I have to tell you, if it wasn't for, first of all, bodybuilding, but you know, that, because that set the table, that was like foundation for me.
Yeah,
and I was an athlete, but bodybuilding took that shit to a whole next level, which you know, because you've seen it.
Right up
close. Yeah, because I competed quite a bit and at the world level and all that. And it's an insane sport. It demands so much because you have to pay attention to all the little bullshit to look good on stage, unlike a power lifter. You know, they just have to be strong as hell.
Yeah.
And explosive and that kind of thing.
You can be fat as a power lifter. You just got to be strong.
But with bodybuilding, man, it demands so much from you. But I tell you what, if it wasn't for that damn sport, if it wasn't being an athlete, because you know what? Life is a bitch sometimes. And the people that are athletic and have an athletic mindset, that's going to benefit you just to go through life, because life's going to kick your ass at times. And shit's going to happen to you. It's not if, it's when. It's just the way life is. But to have that kind of background, I'm really lucky that I got into it. Because at this age, at 65, you know what? I'm still doing really good. And I'm enjoying. Look, I still have the aches and pains, but shit, I had aches and pains when I was playing football. You know, when I was 25 or 30, I've just had a little.
I had aches and pains when I was doing wrestling.
Exactly.
Just how you recover and bounce back.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what. And again, I want to get into this side of it with you. In the ninja sport and in the stuff that you're doing, how important? Now we know that training is obviously very important to you. Now in that training, because I talk about the three training components that are most responsible for any kind of goal that you're trying to reach: weight training, cardio, nutrition.
Yeah.
And so we know that that weight training is very important to you for different reasons. Do you do much cardio?
Yeah, actually, I do a ton of cardio, because I mean, you need your endurance. You're running these obstacles, and if you are doing the show and you want to make it up or make it to Vegas, which is the finals, you're doing 9 obstacles back to back to back to back. So you need muscle endurance. You need cardio. You need it all in order to keep that going, because otherwise you're going down. So I tried every morning. I mean, not every morning. I would say probably like 2-3 days a week, I'll try to get up and do a little fasted cardio. But then I'd say 5 out of 6 days a week, I do cardio. I mean, even if it's hopping on the treadmill and walking on an incline, or if it's on the bike and doing 25 minutes, something just to get my heart going. But if I'm doing intense cardio, I'll go do sprint intervals. Sprint intervals are the great. I'll do 20 minutes. I'll sprint for a minute, walk for a minute, sprint for a minute, walk for a minute. So I'd say that's the best.
Yeah, I've had people do that on the actual cardio equipment. We'll do that.
Yeah.
They call it HIIT training or whatever, but it's interval training. Now, when it comes to the sport of for Ninja Warrior, like, one of the things I learned in training athletes is that you want to train an athlete very specific to not only the sport that they're in, but also to the position of the sport that they're in. Because each, like in baseball, every position has its priority list, you know, from the most important thing that you need to do to the least important. And if you don't train in that order, this is where trainers out there, and there's a lot of fake trainers out there, they can really fuck athletes up. I mean, especially athletes, because they make their living at this stuff, you know?
100%.
Yeah, and if you don't know how to train them specifically for that. So, like with Ninja Warrior, is there like a certain type of cardio that's better to be more specific to the actual sport as well as the training? What kind of training? I'm asking two different questions here. Cardio-wise, what would be the best to be more in line with that ninja sport?
I would say the HIIT training, sprint interval, because everything's explosive.
Okay.
So, like, when I teach these kids at the Ninja Warrior gym, I like to teach them explosive movements, because everything you do, like, when I run up the warp wall, I'm not jogging up the warp wall. I'm sprinting. I'm literally doing – I'm giving everything. It's what we call it full commit or send it, because once you're going – you're up. You're 14 and a half feet in the air, and you got to go. You got to grab that wall, or else you're falling on your back. So you want to fully commit.
Okay. So that's cardio. Now, what about your training? How specific does that need to be? I know, like,
A lot of stuff is like grip training. You have to have, because your forearms, you're hanging on cliff hangers. You're constantly hanging. Your hand and your grip strength has to be unreal. But your core also, because a lot of things you're, like when I'm doing like the, I don't know if you're the Sam ladder, where you take the bar and you take it up to the next rung.
Oh, yeah.
That's core training. Like, so it's almost like a kipping pull up in a way, but it's not. You're just, it's a pull up, but you're kind of just sending it, but it's all core. Everything's got to be that. So, I mean, you don't have to have the best abs in the world, but you definitely have to work them, because otherwise you're going down.
Yeah. Would you say that because I'm not a big fan of CrossFit.
I dislike CrossFit.
Yeah.
I don't do any of it, because I don't want to have bad shoulders when I'm 50.
Oh yeah. of all the styles of training out there, they have the most lawsuits against them and most injuries. I mean, people really get themselves hurt with that
sport. Yeah, I mean, it's all that stuff. Those pools were throwing everything above. Like, I already have aches and pains in my shoulders. I can only imagine what my shoulders would feel like then.
I wasn't sure if the CrossFit training was more in line with Ninja Warrior. Again, obviously, by some of the questions or things I'm mentioning, I haven't watched enough of it, because if I watched it long enough, I mean, that's what I do. I can design a program based on what you do as a sport. That's the reason why I'm asking you that.
I would say the most popular outside, CrossFit is not as popular for Ninja Warrior. I would say rock climbing and I don't know if you heard of parkour, where it's like parkour is like the kids where they're running up the buildings and jumping from wall to wall.
Yeah.
All that agile stuff where it's kind of just, you know, if you fall, you might die type stuff. Yeah. Like a lot of those kids are really doing it. Like I know people that can run. They just like, did you hop on telephone poles and, you know, climb a telephone pole all the way to the top, or, you know, jump from this wall to this wall. Like, I do a little bit of that, but, you know, I'm older now. I'm not trying to hurt my knee. So I'm not trying to be in the hospital. So I keep my stuff more I go to safer route with it. So I just keep it in the gym. You know, if I got pads on the ground, I'll do it.
Yeah. So in your one more question here for the Ninja Warrior thing, when you're teaching these kids, do you have a weight training program that they're on at that point?
It's not weight training. We actually have, so it's in a gymnastics facility. It's called Flip for Me. So everything is, you know, safe. We have springboards. We have a foam pit. We actually have a ninja rig with, we have the warp walls, but they're scaled down. We have a 10-foot, 11-foot, and 12-foot. And then we have, you know, obstacles that they can do in a way, or at least they can work to do.
Yeah.
Whether it's, we have like rings and doorknobs where it's like taking the rings, going to the next doorknob, things like that, where I know they can eventually do, maybe not right away, but they will be able to. And it's a little scaled down, because now they have American Ninja Warrior Junior, where I think it's 13 is the age where they start. It's 13 to 17.
Mm-hmm.
So these kids now, they have something to work for. You know, they want to be on the show, because now they're looking up to these 13 and 14 year old kids who they watch, and they're like, shit, I can do that too, or at least maybe I can.
Yeah. So, is it a more of a male dominated sport, or are there quite a few females that are in it now?
Man, it used to be, but now we're getting some girls that are killing it. This girl, Jessie Graff, she's basically the face of Ninja Warrior. She's the first girl to make it to Stage 3 in finals. She's a beast. You know, she's an aerialist, gymnastic. Like, she's, yeah. There's guys that are like, man, I want to be like her.
Yeah, really. Okay, so now the third component that I'd like to talk about is, first, what kind of nutrition program do you follow?
I keep a high protein regimen, low carb, because I still want to stay lean. We all want to stay lean in this situation. So I'm Italian, so it's hard to try to stay away from the pastas and the, yeah, and the breads, but I do. So I pretty much get up in the morning, I eat my egg whites, turkey bacon, I have my almonds for snacks. I try to keep tuna, grilled chicken on deck whenever I can. If I have my carbs, I have like a couple cups of rice, and that's pretty much it. And then, yeah, I keep a very lean diet, because at the end of the day, I have to fly around on bar to bar. I'm 170 now. I don't want to weigh 190.
Yeah. I think it's just really, when it comes to nutrition, I think it's really fascinating, because there's a lot of ways to skin the cat, you know, and what you're talking about is, I would say, I hear a lot of bodybuilders that eat this way, you know, and yet I was on a high fat diet. That's what really worked for me. Like the high fat diet, I wrote a book called The Anabolic Diet eons ago with Dr. Mauro DiPasquale. And it was basically a high fat diet. Nobody wants to talk about fat in the industry because they think it's a culprit, and it's not, no matter what anybody says. If you don't really know and get into that part of it, like the keto diet, you don't understand how that's working in your system, because when you're lowering your carbohydrates, you may know all this already, but you have two different metabolisms in your body, a free fatty acid metabolism and a glucose metabolism. The distinction is eating 30 grams a day or less of carbs. That switches your body, basically, in layman terms, is that your body now is burning fat as its main source of energy.
Yeah.
If you don't do that, then your body is in glucose metabolism, you know, because people say, oh, I can eat a junk food diet. So no, not really, because that junk food has a lot of carbs in it. You know, yeah. So it sort of ruins that whole process. But a lot of ways to skin a cat when it comes to nutrition. And, you know, it's like everything else. You know, you have to kind of do it firsthand to see how it just really works for you.
Yeah.
You know, and you would think, you know, we're all humans, but our physiology is, even though we're a lot alike, we're kind of different that way, you know?
Yeah, and we're all different. Yeah. I've seen people lose weight the weirdest ways. I mean, everybody's metabolism is different. You see girls out here, they can eat everything and they don't gain an ounce. So it's so weird.
And I'm sort of a believer of a calorie being a calorie, you know, and I know that goes against some popular beliefs, but what I use for an example, because I hear, you know, Mikey, I've been in the, I've had personal training studios for 38 years, basically. I only have one now, but I, you know, over the years, you hear everything from people as the reasons why they can't, you know, they can't lose weight, they can't do this, and they can't, well, we know a lot of that stuff is just bad excuses, you know, but one of the things is, people say, well, I have a thyroid condition, I just hear all these fucking excuses, you know, and I thought to myself, and I'm not saying this is a really good example, and it might really be inappropriate, but I say, look, have you ever seen a fat person in a concentration camp? For fuck's sake, nobody's is fat there.
No,
I'm sure one or two people had a thyroid condition, but nobody, you know why? Because it's portion control, for fuck's sake, at the end of the day, you know?
You can only eat so much, that's it.
Yeah, put yourself on a 30-day starvation diet, and I promise you, your thyroid is going to wake the fuck up, or you're going to lose weight, because you're going to have to. That's just kind of the way it is. You're going to die off. Yeah. And I'm certainly not suggesting that. But again, they're just, anyway.
100%. I feel like too many people make too many excuses. And I think that everybody has the opportunity to lose weight and get to a point where they feel comfortable. But I just feel like a lot of people are lazy as much.
Well, no. And you know what? The thing about it is, it's an easier way out. Like it's because as well as I know, when it comes to weight training or cardio or any kind of training regimen that you're on, which includes nutrition, you have to be willing to do the work. Not just for 30 fucking days or maybe 2 months, because that's exactly what's going on in the quick fix nutrition industry. Nutrisystems, Jenny Craig, you know the ones I'm talking about, you know? And these people that are attracted to that are I call it shiny object syndrome, SOS. They're looking for the next best thing to get them in shape. And the truth of the matter is, you just got to do the damn work. You know,
I hear it all the time.
Yeah,
my friends or people hit me up. They're like, "Hey, how did you get strong? How do you do this?" Or I'm gonna be like you soon. Or hey, I've been training for 20 days. I'm on my way. I'm coming for you. I said, "All right. Well, once you've been training for 25 years, then come for me. Like, how about that?" Because I can tell you, you're not gonna beat me in this one.
Yeah. And so that's what goes on with most people. They are their own worst enemy, and they are lazy, and they don't want to have to do the work, and they're afraid of that commitment, you know?
Yep.
It's not an easy thing to do. And the way that I've learned how to stay in this thing, and when I'm advising my clientele, because most of the people that I see in my studio are people that are there for health and fitness. You know, you have the athletes and those people, but the bulk of the people are there for weight loss, tighten tone, condition the body. That's pretty much a health and fitness type of program, you know, and it's like, you have to be willing to put in at my studio. I tell them 3 hours a week. If you can be consistent and put in 3 hours, 3 days a week, and follow those in those three components and do that consistent, you'll be surprised at the kind of results you're going to get.
Yeah, now, you're introducing something that you're not used to.
Exactly. So, and then I've learned over the years is that the key there, which is really the downfall of these quick fix programs, a lot of these training regimens, is if you don't make this user-friendly enough to people to stay on, they're not going to stay on it. Nutrisystems and Jenny Craig's are designed to fail, Mikey, because if you take a look at the stats and the human condition and the nature of that, they buy that diet until they lose the weight. And then guess what? They go off 8 months down the road. They're in worse shape than when they started.
Yep. Because now they feel like, oh, I lost this weight. I can eat more now.
No. Yeah. And they haven't learned how to make it a lifestyle. So the key there is to make something that is user-friendly, a lifestyle, that you can do this on an everyday basis, and you never have to worry about, down the road one day being like in the worst shape of your life again. I think that's just kind of what happens with a lot of people, and more than the people that actually have made a commitment to themselves to stay in the kind of condition that you're in, even the condition that I've been for a long time. And I've been at that spot where it's like, holy shit, I was overwhelmed with 80 pounds that I had to lose, at one time in my life. But I made myself a promise. I was never going to let that happen again, because that's overwhelming, and that can just put you in a tailspin.
I did the same thing. Once senior year, I had to cut down, and I was just being stupid. I had to lose, I think, 13 pounds overnight.
Yeah.
And you wrestlers, make weight for the next day.
You wrestlers are a piece of work, let me tell you.
Yeah, that was – I lost 13 pounds. I actually lost 13.3 pounds overnight.
Yeah. I work with some of these guys, and I know what you're saying is actually, I mean, back then when I was training wrestlers, that was more the norm than them actually being on the sensible program. They go out and put that fucking wetsuit or that, what do you call that? Yep. That suit on.
Our sauna suit. Yeah.
Sauna suit, and go out and run themselves to death, and then go wrestle somebody. I mean, you're probably at your weakest point.
I was at my weakest point, 100%. And then when I ate my food, my body was just like,
exactly. Can't hardly move. Okay. And then you've done some acting now, right?
Not necessarily acting. I've done other reality TV shows, but I was in a movie. It was like a movie musical type thing where I performed songs in the movie. It was called Standing Ovation. It was almost like a high school musical. We toured around, went to different dance events and gymnastics gyms and schools, and we did like a whole tour with that.
Yeah,
but yeah, it was a movie musical. It came out in 2011, but it was an awesome experience. Got to be in a movie, got to go see myself in the movies, which was really fucking cool. And then I've done other reality TV shows that are more funny driven. I mean, I don't know if you've seen what I posted an old clip from me on a show called Dating Naked. No. That was quite an interesting experience, let me tell you.
That's funny. So you don't have any aspirations to be necessarily an actor in movies?
No, I like to just be me. I'm really good at being me. So I like, if I can be myself and I can be this funny, goofy persona that I have, then I'm fine. I don't really have any interest to learning the craft. And I respect people that do, because I mean, some of my good friends are actors and they're getting really good roles. And I see the work that they put in. I feel like I shouldn't disrespect their craft, and just try and get in there. I mean, if somebody ever offered me a role and say, hey, I want you to come in and do this, you just got to be this funny Jersey Shore type character, I'll go do it. I'll collect a paycheck real fast. But to see what these people are doing, and then you see actors like Joaquin Phoenix, who just did the Joker.
Oh,
and
man.
Like how great they are. I know that I can never be that. I know what I'm good at. I know what I'm not good at. So, yeah.
I had way back when, have you heard of a guy by the name of Kevin Costner by chance? Mm-hmm. Dances with Wolves.
Of course.
I trained him for that shit, you know, and
that's awesome.
Yeah. And I had my time with these guys, these actors, and cause I was flying around, blah, blah, blah. Anyway. So what he gave me a chance to do a audition. This goes to this. I thought I wanted to be a freaking actor now, you know, like probably a lot of people. And he, so I'm at this point, I'm like 280 pounds and I'm pretty good shape now, just bodybuilding.
Yeah.
And he said, hey, you want to do this? I'm going to audition for this part. And, what's the name of that? Bodyguard. I always forget. Bodyguard. I said, hell yeah, man. So they sent me lines, Mikey. It was like 20 words. Fucking had this thing nailed, right? Until I got into the audition. And all of a sudden, it got real. They had all these people in that room. You know, they were there. Some of them were there from the part that I thought I was just going to walk in and say some shit. And I got it, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I went into that room and the director came. You studied your lines? I said, yeah. And they came in, said, ready, action. And I choked so bad. And that's what that's when I realized I did not want to be an actor, because they do, you know, it's like everything else. People that are masters in their industry, they make shit look easy. That's stuff that's not easy to do.
Yep, 100%. You know?
And maybe like you said, maybe if it was just something that you just naturally, you know, you're a goofy guy. I mean, you're the one that's saying that, and funny and goofy and all that. But, you know, then the question is, do you freeze on camera? Does that change you? Because sometimes when that camera comes on, it does.
No, I'm good on camera. I was naked on camera. I was naked in Panama, and I was the bachelor on a TV show for that. If I could be naked in a rainforest, nothing's going to stop me. I can promise you that.
It's pretty funny. Anyway, listen, this has been a fun interview. Again, I didn't get to talk to you much in Vegas, but I learned a lot about you. Hey, let me ask you this. While I've got you on camera here, anything that you'd like to promote on our podcast, go for it.
I mean, right now I have a new single out. It's on pretty much iTunes, Apple Music, Spotify. It's called Can't Undo November Tides. Go check it out. My Instagram is at I Am Mikey P. Twitter is the same. So if you want to come follow me, come join this crazy journey that I'm on, welcome.
Beautiful. Hey, listen, I'm going to be in Vegas here March the 1st. And I'm going to be with a bunch of family, but if you don't mind, like if I get a second away, I might just reach out to you. If you're there, fine. If not, no big deal. But I don't go to Vegas much anymore.
Okay.
But every once in a while I do. But maybe I'll look you up and we'll shoot more shit, okay?
Yeah, man. Shoot me a message for sure.
Okay, Mikey. Thank you very much for coming on.
All right, Lee. I'll talk to you soon.
Ciao. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.